the Sound of Hockey episode 278. We're calling this one the Gary Roberts episode. Why are we calling it that, John?
Gary Roberts had 278 even strength points.
Oh, okay.
He played 21 NHL seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the Kraken sports performance consultant.
Right.
So, yeah.
He's Kraken adjacent.
I mean, he's on the like staff page, so not quite adjacent. I'd say he's solid in the Kraken camp. But doesn't he have like some off-season strength and conditioning kind of programs for a bunch of NHLers or aspiring NHLers in the Toronto area?
And I don't think they're Kraken specific. Right.
He probably just runs a program. It's like he runs a gym.
Yeah.
But he does personal training for the Kraken, maybe. Mm. That's how to look at it.
Okay.
I'm not sure if that's totally it. So,
all right. You're pretty much making up what his role is.
Don't think it's that big of a stretch. I'm just trying to put an analogy together for people to understand the difference between what he does in those two roles.
Okay.
That's all.
Sure. This is Sound of Hockey. I'm Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle on the X, and I'm feeling a little crabby these days. So.
We didn't ask. And Curtis Izaki. Hello, Curtis.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deep Sea Hockey on the Twitter.
Are you feeling crabby these days?
I'm also feeling... did you say crappy or crabby?
Crabby.
Okay, I'll go with crappy. How about that?
Okay, crappy.
I am in a pretty good mood today, actually. Unrelated to the game that got played on Tuesday night.
Well, isn't that great for you?
Yeah, hunky-dory. Thanks a lot, Darren.
Can I tell you guys something? I did two workouts today. Like, I got up in the morning and I went to a workout class. Even though I was up until 1:30 in the morning last night, I got up at like 6 and went to a workout class, which always makes me feel really good if I can start the day that way.
Nice.
And then I got home this evening and I was like, I still have energy and it's really nice out. So I went out for a 3-mile run. Is that impressive? Are you impressed?
I was impressed with the weather. The weather was nice tonight.
I do like strength and then like a cardio, different types. Parts of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool. Yeah. So
thanks.
I'd say I'm impressed. Yeah. The weather's
kind of really nice
actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the sun came out even after that collapse.
For you, apparently.
That calamity that happened on Tuesday for the Seattle Kraken against the Golden Knights. I almost said for the Golden Knights, but the Golden Knights had a pretty great outcome in that one. We'll get to it.
Oh, I do want to call out, met a Patreon supporter and a listener of the pod. Kyle J. met him at 32 on Sunday after his first Learn to Play session.
Oh, cool.
It was very cool. Yeah. So I was psyched I got to meet him, and we appreciate his support on the Patreon, but I thought it was really cool he's doing Learn to Play. So
very nice.
Yeah.
I had somebody shout at me as I was walking into the arena, "Hey, Darren Brown!" And he kind of seemed like he really knew me, and I couldn't recognize him. So if you're somebody that I've met multiple times before and I couldn't place you, I'm really sorry about that, but I appreciated you saying hi to me outside the arena, whoever you were.
Nothing beats the five-star people yelling at us at this T-Birds game where they're like, "5-star!" They're like 2 sections over.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Andy, Darren, and I like sitting right there, 5-star! And we're like... what's he yelling? What's he? Oh, 5-star.
Oh, he's reviewing us. Yeah, Speaking of which, we don't have one this week. We had a couple really nice ones last week and week before that, and we were on a nice little roll. Nothing this week. So get your 5-star review in on Apple Podcasts, and we will read it on next week's show. I am glad that you mentioned a Patreon subscriber, though, because we're well overdue for a Patreon starting lineup, and you didn't actually share with me the names that you want me to read.
I did, but that's okay.
Okay.
On
where
Slack.
Are those? On Slack. Okay. Here is our Patreon starting lineup. At center, Robert Y. At left wing, Dan. That's a good one, John. I'm sure Dan knows who he is. At right wing, Lisa S. At left defense, L. That's ELL. At right defense, Daryl M. And in goal, JH.
It's not as bad as if we don't do it every week because, you know, like starting lineups.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's nice.
So with like one of those things where absence makes the heart grow fonder,
that's
that
exactly
kind of thing.
It. Yes.
You missed the starting lineup is what you're saying.
Yeah, but I don't want to do it every week.
Okay.
But we really appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have a mailbag after this one that will go to the Patreon supporters.
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
Very true. So be on the lookout. If you're a Patreon member, you'll get that mailbag into the Patreon feed very soon. We are recording that one right after we record the main show tonight. So if you're not a Patreon subscriber, pop on over to patreon.com/soundofhockey. Join, show us some support. We would really appreciate it. And then you get some extra content there as well, including our mailbag episodes, which often end up being quite enjoyable. So,
yeah.
And I'm glad that you mentioned things that you don't want to do every week, because we don't always have a get off my lawn. We've eased off the crow talk that came from the last get off my lawn we did.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to give an update on that at all. We're just we're easing off.
Good. All right.
I understood that we
weaning off the crows.
Exactly. We had, for lack of a better term, beaten the dead horse with the crow talk. So we're easing off from that. I have a new one, though. It's kind of a, there's a get off my lawn within a get off my lawn. First off, I had to go to the dentist today. I've been dealing with this. I had to get two crowns put on. Actually, I have to put several crowns on. And so my first get off my lawn is Midwestern dentistry.
Okay.
Because in the Midwest, they use these terrible metal fillings, or at least they did when I was a kid. And I didn't take very good care of my teeth when I was a kid. And so I'd always go and get fillings. I'm like, yeah, whatever, fillings, I don't care. And then as soon as I moved to New York, the first dentist I saw was like, oh, you must be from the Midwest.
And no,
I was like,
way, really?
What do you mean? He's like, well, you have these metal fillings. These don't bond to your teeth, so, you know, they're not like great, because eventually they kind of break them apart. At that point, I'm in like my early 20s. I'm like, well, I don't want to get new fillings for no reason. Like, that's ridiculous, you know? Move to the West Coast. They're like, oh, you must be from the Midwest. I'm like, how do you know that? They're like, well, you have these metal fillings. They're breaking your teeth apart. And sure enough, one of my teeth actually broke at some point. So I had to get first crown. So now I'm going through this process of getting a bunch of crowns put on. And today I went for, it's a two-step process. So round one, they basically grind at your teeth for like 90 minutes a piece. So I had a 3-hour appointment 2 weeks ago where they were just, it was really miserable. And then today I went back to get the permanent crown put on, because they take a mold, make the tooth in some far off lab, then they send in the crown.
Far off lab. How far off do you think the lab is?
It's probably next door. Right. But they make it sound like it's really far away.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that way, when the crown doesn't fit right, which is what happened today.
Oh, no.
Then they can say, well, the lab sent the wrong thing. It's not right. So now I have to go back.
Sent you somebody else's tooth.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So really, I don't blame my dentist.
Yeah.
But I do blame Midwestern dentistry.
Do you think it's evolved since then?
I sure hope so.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. So that's my first get off my lawn. But then on my way home from receiving the news that I'm going to have to come back for another like hour plus appointment in 2 weeks, this guy comes rolling up behind me on the West Seattle Bridge. I'm going significantly over the speed limit and I'm in the left lane. And he comes, one of those where it's like he flies up behind me and he's like right on my bumper, you know, like he's clearly going like 80 miles an hour in a 40 mile an hour speed limit. And so I start to move to the right to like get out of his way, because that seems like the conscientious thing when a jerk comes up behind you. And so he puts on his signal to go around me. And so I'm like, oh, he's moving. Like I see him in my mirror going around me. So I come back to the left, right? Because now I'm like, okay, he's going around me. He like speeds around me in the right lane, cuts me off, and then flicks me off.
That guy's got
like
some,
out the window, middle finger. I didn't deserve that. I was moving out of his way.
I'm sorry about that, Darren. I really needed to get someplace in West Seattle.
I didn't know you drove a big Dodge Ram truck lifted. It was like the exact kind of vehicle you would expect somebody. And so here's the funny part is then we come off the West Seattle Bridge. He's sped past me at this point. And then we just roll up to a stoplight and guess who comes cruising right up behind him. Oh. And so I'm like, you can tell that we're both like trying not to make a, I didn't want to engage with this guy. You never know like,
you don't.
What's going on. But it was frustrating. It was, and it always like makes my blood boil a little bit when stuff like that happens.
Yeah.
You know, even though I'm like, all right, well, this guy is just a jackass and he's having a bad day and I'm gonna whatever. But part of me is like, man, if I were a tough guy, I would beat this fellow but I'm not a tough guy. So I let
and
those things
I don't think that's the best.
Probably not.
It sounds like it's for the best that you're not.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It sure made me mad.
Society
though.
Is safer.
Gosh darn it, it made me mad. Gee whiz.
Well, gee whiz. Well, actually, these two get off my lawns make me feel better. I don't know about you, John. It's brightened my mood.
Well, and it's crazy that Darren's the one that's in the chipper mood.
I know. I'm saying maybe it's transferred.
If I were in a worse mood today.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Ooh, yeah.
Neither of these things really bothered me, which sometimes that dentist appointment should have really bothered me, right? Yeah. Like, it should have really, really pissed me off, but it didn't. And then the unnecessary and uncalled for middle finger really should have put me over the edge, but it didn't. I kind of let it slide. I did get pissed for a minute. I was like pretty mad at that guy, but then I just let it go. And that felt very adult of me. So
indeed. Indeed. Yeah. Well done, Darren.
Yeah.
So get off my lawn, that jackass. And if you're listening, please stop, because I hate you.
Yeah.
I do want to also, I promise we'll talk Kraken at some point, even though I don't know how much you want to talk Kraken right now.
And we got it.
Okay, we got it. But as you all know, I went to the Minnesota State High School hockey tournament last week, and it was a truly magical experience. I had such a great time. I only got to go to the quarterfinal game because I was flying back and forth for things going on. But yeah, it was awesome. My nephew's team, Crete and Durham Hall, they went down 3-0 in the first period to a team called Centennial, and they came back, chipped away, and then won it in double overtime. And it was as great to be there as you possibly could imagine. Full arena. And the way they do it is it's like two games in a session. They announced the attendance for the session as 19,000.
Wow.
So now those fans are not there for the full two games.
Right, we
float in towards the middle of the third period of the first game and then watched, and then that happened for fans of the first game.
Do you have assigned seats? Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, so I don't know if it was obvious, but I watched that. Mm-hmm. The game was incredible.
It was fun.
It was the best Minnesota hockey game I've seen. Now, that's not saying a lot, because sometimes I start to watch and then I start to lose interest a bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, just because I'm like, I don't have any connection. And sometimes the games are like blowouts or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's not, you don't always get a great game, because I think the two or three prior games to that one were blowouts.
Yeah.
Like the Div A or 2A? Yeah.
Class A.
So Class A, yeah.
Class A are the smaller schools, and then they're in the bigger schools.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm psyched for Andy.
Yeah.
And I'm psyched that you've been sharing this for a while, because it was like right in my Friday. That was fun.
So we had,
or Thursday.
We had actual tears in the stands. So it was pretty cool. My brother was saying repeatedly, like, that was the best hockey watching experience I've ever had. And I probably agree with him. Like, there were some pretty magical moments with the Kraken last season, right? And I had the infamous "we're going streaking" game when I was in early in high school for the Wild. But I mean, that was up there. It was
for
definitely
sure.
That's
amazing. How was Andy doing after?
Great. No, I should say they ended up, speaking of blowouts, they got smoked the second night in the semifinals, but then they recovered and won third place. So that's an awesome outcome. They weren't even supposed to be in the tournament, so it was fun. But he played so well. Yeah, he played great.
Yeah, he looked really confident, fun to watch. Like, much more confident. He handled the puck really well and like moved it. And like, it wasn't like stay at home, dump it in, play it safe. He at least that was my observation.
In that game, he led a rush with about 5 minutes left. They were tied 3-3, and we're all like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, is he going to do it? And then he got the puck poked off his stick before he could shoot. So
I was feeling that too. I was feeling that from here in Seattle. I watched the game too. And my two big takeaways were level of hockey, Minnesota high school is incredibly good, high quality of play. And the video stream for Minnesota high school hockey, also very good. AHL TV could take some notes, I think.
It is. I mean, it's a real broadcast. Yeah. Like, it's pretty legit.
And your dad has some... Didn't he have some influence
on it? Yeah.
The
family lore is that he was a TV director for the CBS affiliate there, and he like was involved when their station, it's a different station now, but when their station got the rights to that tournament, he went and like met the producers from Hockey Night in Canada and kind of modeled it after that. And it really helped make it into what it is today, which is pretty cool.
Did he ever meet Lou Nanny?
Oh, yeah. He's good friends with Lou.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Who... called his 60th?
60th, yeah. It was his last time doing the state tournament, so he's retiring. Yeah, but
it's pretty funny. Like, he's great on there. He's different, right? Yeah. But he's great. Yeah. So,
man, what an experience. I'm sure people are tired of hearing about this, but it was truly very, very special, and I'm really glad that I got to be a part of it, even though it was only for one game. His team did go very viral. Because the Selly stick,
yeah,
which was not an original. That's been done before.
He said in the interview, post interview.
Right. He saw it on TikTok. So, but basically the celebration was he put his glove, he scored a goal, put his glove on the blade of his stick. And then they, every time they score, they skate the entire length of the ice to go celebrate in front of their student section. So he went like sliding on a knee halfway down the ice, pretending that his glove was a camera on a selfie stick. And two of his teammates were in the background, like posing. It was hilarious.
It was very
funny move. Yeah. So anyway. Shout out to Minnesota State High School Hockey and specifically to my nephew, Andy. Also, unfortunately, Edina ended up winning.
And everybody hates Edina.
They do, except for Edina fans. Yeah. I was talking to Joey Decord in the locker room today, and he's like, what you been up to? I was like, oh, I went to my nephew's state tournament.
Oh, yeah?
He's like, oh, who ended up winning? Was it Edina? I was like, yeah. He's like, I didn't even watch it. I knew it was going to be Edina. He's not from Minnesota. I don't know why he knows that. But
because everybody knows Edina.
There was actually an Edina fan sitting next to us at the game. And so the bit is, if you've ever seen Mighty Ducks, they reference Adam Banks as a cake eater.
Yeah.
That's referencing Edina. Edina is the cake eaters. They're like the rich suburb. And so there's a guy sitting next to us with a green hat that just said cake.
Nice.
Yeah. Funny.
Amazing. That's
Where's crazy. Minnetonka rank?
They're heading that way.
Okay.
In terms of what? Cake eaters or
both.
Quality?
Yeah.
They won state last year. They were number one in the state and got upset. They were actually undefeated going through sections, and they got upset in the section final by Chanhassen, which is the team that beat Creighton-Durham Hall in the semis.
Yeah.
And then Chanhassen lost in the final to Edina.
Ah, got it. Interesting.
Okay, that's
a lot of talk. A lot of minute.
So Kraken talk.
Okay.
Promised we would do it. The big thing, I guess, this week, well, there's a few big things. We had Eberle hitting 1,000. We had Eberle signing a 2-year deal, and we had Alex Wennberg getting traded. So those were the three big headlines in terms of non-game things that happened. Anything in particular that you guys would like to start with here?
Let's go chronological.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wennberg trade. I think we all knew that was coming at when we recorded last week. We didn't know what the return was. I've had some perspective on that because I valued... 2 months ago, I probably would have said Wennberg gets a second, and that's probably appropriate value. Maybe a second and something else. But Monahan was traded. Lindholm was traded for first. I'm not saying that Wennberg is as good as Lindholm and warrants it, but I thought Monahan was a closer comp. That said, I valued him because of everything he does for the Kraken, and I realized like not every team getting him needs him to do all those things he does for the Kraken. So he's theoretically not as useful to other teams because they don't need him to kill penalties, take faceoffs, you know, on the power play, etc. So he ended up going for the Rangers, which I think we were talking about, but I guessed Boston and Curtis said the Rangers. But
yeah,
good for him. Yeah. You got something for him. That's all I have to say about it.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much all we have to say about that.
The return being a second and a fourth, I looked back at, we were talking about trades back in January on Slack. Slack's already come up in this podcast, so I feel like I can just share. We communicate on Slack.
We communicate
sometimes.
On Slack.
Yeah. And on January 19th, I looked back on it and I said, I thought Wennberg would go for a second and something else. So like judging from that, that's what his market ended up being. Now, in the lead up to it, there was some discussion. It might be a second and a prospect, and maybe our expectations got a little higher. But it kind of ended up in the range that we thought it would.
We originally thought.
And with Monahan at the time, I remember we discussed that and we were talking about Wennberg. And I think for the Kraken, Wennberg is a better fit and a better player than Monahan would be. But I do think Monahan has some appeal in the league that Wennberg just hasn't reached, just in terms of his, the way he plays, his size, things like that. So I always thought maybe Wennberg could go for the same as Monahan, but maybe that was kind of, a little bit of wishful thinking that he'd go for that much.
Yeah.
But at the time of the Wennberg trade, I don't know what you guys were thinking. Were you thinking there'd be another trade after that one for the Kraken?
Yep. I thought, especially once they called up Cale Fleury, I thought for sure Justin Schultz was going to get traded. But there was the wrinkle of Vince Dunn being hurt, and we didn't really know how badly he was hurt, but he's already on the ice too. He's like, all right, maybe it's a short-term thing. But I just was like, I bet they're hearing offers of like a fifth for him. And that's just what's the point then? Like, you might as well keep him and you can get yourselves into the playoffs. And
I think that's ultimately what it was.
Yeah.
I think Schultz was probably squarely available, as were maybe, you know, another forward, whether that's Kyler Yamamoto or Tomas Tatar or someone. I feel like if you looked at how the roster was built, they could make another trade or two. But I think the front office, I think at that time, it's hard to have that perspective now after two losses. But at
that's the thing. Yeah.
At that time, I think it was right for them to say, okay, this team is going well, has a shot, a long shot, but a shot at the playoffs. Is it worth, you know, trading a Schultz or a Tatar when the return is like a fifth round pick? Like, what is, you know, I enjoy analyzing the draft, getting into it. Those types of picks are real long shots.
Yeah.
You know, like anything, you know, really anything after a second round pick is a real long shot. But a third, that has some value. You know, it's maybe you get a player there, or maybe you can use it in another trade. But if you start talking about fourth, fifth round picks, it's like you really have to weigh the impact on your locker room, the impact of kind of taking the wind out of the sails of a team that looked at that time like it might be pointed in the right direction. I think the front office just decided whatever they were hearing wasn't worth it.
And before you like message us about, oh, this fifth round pick is like awesome and like we get it. There's obviously some diamonds in the rough, right? And some long shots, but that's not a realistic expectation.
It's all a balancing act. I mean, yes, fifth, sixth, seventh round picks, you know, you could get a diamond in the rough for sure. And I totally also get the point of view of people who are skeptical of making the playoffs. And it's like, just get as many picks as you can. Why not? You know, take whatever you can. But I do think at the end of the day, that front office had to balance what they were seeing on the ice and the culture they want to build long-term. And maybe that's a good way to transition into talking about Jordan Eberle. But you got to balance those things when you're going to tear apart a team.
Yeah, I think they played their hand. We don't know what was offered for any of those assets you just mentioned. But I don't think you just don't take anything. Like, there's a point where it's better to have competitive games down the stretch than kind of concede a complete sell-off. So.
Yeah. And I don't need to toot my own horn.
Toot.
Which ones?
Well, you know, it was pretty much exactly what I wrote and said would happen.
You also said they're not going to trade Schultz depending on the Dunn situation.
True.
So that was like another, if you want to
toot
again.
I come back to, I think they would have if they got the right offer.
Because Fleury was here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I really think they were ready to pull the trigger on something, and I just don't think it came to fruition. I don't think they got what they wanted. So
they also sent Riker down
as a paper trend. They had to do that for the AHL playoffs.
Yeah. So what we're referring to is Riker Evans was sent down to the AHL for like literally like 30 minutes or an hour around the deadline to be AHL playoff eligible, and then came right back up, and he didn't go anywhere.
Well, what was Kale doing at the same time?
He was physically in Seattle.
Seattle.
But where was he?
He'd been returned to the AHL deadline. So both Kale Fleury and Riker Evans are now AHL playoff eligible.
Got it.
Riker Evans spent no time in Coachella Valley that day. He played for the Kraken that night.
It was just
a paper transaction. But anyway,
fun stuff.
Little side story.
Okay, Eberle.
Yeah, he signed a contract. 2 years, $9.5 million, I think, total.
Yep.
And I like the deal. The one thing I didn't really expect was I thought they were going to just keep him no matter what. I didn't think they'd like scramble to get something done at the 11th hour. But I have I just feel like they might have used that a little bit as leverage to get him to come down on his term, right? Because one of the reports out there from one of the like insiders was that he wanted a third year and Kraken didn't want to do that. So,
yeah,
which could be true. I have no idea on that part.
And it's advantageous that gets out for the Kraken, because then he really needs to decide and not call a bluff or whatever. Yeah.
And they could have traded him, or they could have kept him, or they could have signed him or not signed him, according to reports, before the deadline.
And
so
we don't know.
It's interesting. Yeah. They ended up doing one of those things.
Toot, toot.
So I don't know if I told you this, but
I didn't report that.
No,
I said,
know.
Here's what
I
think will happen.
I know. I'm just joking.
And that was right. So toot, toot to that.
So I don't know if I told you guys this, that my morning skate on Friday morning, 6 a.m. on the main ice at Kraken Community Iceplex.
Yeah, now you're bragging.
Maybe, but when I got on the ice at 5:55.
Wow, bragging again, 5 minutes early. Okay,
carry on. Ron Francis's office light was on.
Oh.
And NHL Network was going on TV. I didn't see anybody in there. I couldn't. You can't really see from the ice if he's in there. And it was off by 7 a.m. when we got off the ice.
Hmm.
Like, that's literally when I got the deal done. And it might be like transacting, right, with the league or kind of communicating that kind of stuff, but it was
Well, how do you know that that's when he got the deal done? That's speculation.
I think the timing lines up really well.
Okay.
With everything I've heard and seen. Mm-hmm. So
the day before the deadline, Eberle gave an interview, and not like he would tell the media first, I have a deal done, but he didn't make it sound certain that it was going to get done the afternoon before the deadline. And then John has this little insider scoop here at 6 a.m.
And I didn't tweet about that or anything. I thought that would have been a little, at the time, because I didn't know it was Eberle, right? It could have been somebody else or just getting an early start in the day. What was funny is the lights were off by 7.
Yeah.
So, and that's early morning Friday is when they're like, oh, there's been a change. Like, things are optimistic and blah, blah, blah. It looks like.
Yeah.
That, you know, so the
then
rumors
the deal
were,
is announced like a couple hours after that.
Yeah.
And then for the remainder of the day, the Kraken don't do anything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought I liked the signing too. 2 years, 4.75 AAV with a full no trade.
I think it's good for both sides.
Yeah. Like, I think that's avoiding the third year was important for the Kraken, just looking at it. Eberle's
the puzzle
age,
pieces and.
And they're just, they're a team that's trying to avoid bad contracts, trying to avoid bad decisions. Getting him to come down to 2 years was the big hurdle. Like,
well, I think that's why it's a higher AAV too, right? That's probably what they had to give in return to kind of get him off that third year.
I think that's right.
And theoretically, like if he stays at it, there's nothing preventing them from obviously re-signing him for another year or go year to year. I mean, there's plenty of seasoned NHLers that kind of do that later in their career and they stay, you know. So anyway, I'm psyched he's back.
And I've been looking at this a little bit because I was a little surprised at some of the reaction I was seeing on the Eberle deal that maybe people weren't as happy that there was an extension with him. As,
I only saw positive.
Well, maybe it was an expectation that there might be a lower number or I'm not sure, but it didn't seem like the reaction was uniformly positive from what I was seeing. Maybe that was just small sample size. But
In our Slack.
This was not in Slack. This was elsewhere. But Jordan Eberle, he is, you know, getting towards the later stages of the prime years of his career. But he's, if you dig under the surface, he's had a really good season.
Yeah.
Like maybe his
slow
best.
Start, yeah. Slow offensively.
Slow start offensively. But like, you know, even beyond the points, if you look at like kind of game tracking data and then, you know, kind of the more advanced analytics on play impacts, might be his best year with the Kraken. And I don't know. He hasn't shown me this season signs that he's slowing down and there's reason to be concerned that next year, this could be a disaster by next year. I don't see that happening.
I was a little concerned at the beginning of the year, though, to be honest. I think I might have mentioned that maybe not so publicly, that just he was so cold. And I was like, oh, crap, is this the end?
But I think all considered, it's been a good year for him.
Yeah, I thought he's looked great lately.
And then when you add in what he does off the ice, which I think is equally important. I mean, that's Ron Francis talked almost as much about that as Eberle's on ice contributions after the signing. The team doesn't have a captain, but he feels like he's the guy that gets sent out after a bad loss, or you know, he can be the face of the team when the team is struggling, and is kind of a leader by example in the dressing room. So I think he's an important figure as you're, you know, bringing up Shane Wright, bringing up the next generation of Kraken players, hopefully.
Helping Matty Beniers along.
Yeah.
And I think that question keeps getting asked, like, oh, are they now they signed him to 2 years? Are they going to give him the captain? I still don't think so. I haven't asked anybody about this, so this is just like my take. And I don't see why they would. Like, he is leading by example as it is, and yes, he maybe deserves to get that kind of credit, but I think they felt like they kind of shot themselves in the tentacle a little bit by giving the C to Mark Giordano and then getting to the trade deadline and be like, oh, we got to trade this guy, right? That's kind of a tough look. Like, why? Because then why name the guy captain if you're going to turn around? And clearly they didn't. I don't think they meant to do that. Like, I don't think that was the intention going into year one that they're going to be trading him.
Do you think they thought they would sign him?
Who?
Giordano?
I don't know. But my point is, like, they had a short-term captain already. I think it's very likely that he plays out these 2 years here and then doesn't come back after the 2 years for whichever reason, you know, one side or the other. And so I don't know, like, if you've gone 2 years without naming a captain and things have worked out fine, I mean, last year they did at least, like, why name a captain that could only be for 2 years? And why not just wait another year and a half for one of the younger players on a longer contract to take those reins?
I don't know. I mean, I know what you're saying, and I'm like, not.
I also truly don't care.
I'd say that's where I'm at. Yeah. I mean, I do what I don't. Like, do they need it? What I would rather, like, break it down. What are the pros to having a captain? What are the, you know, like, who's kind of next in line or whatever? And is it worth having a captain for 2 years? I don't know.
Like, fans seem really worked up about that. They really want them to name a captain. I just don't think it matters.
I don't think it matters either.
At all.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I don't think anyone spends, like, within the organization really spends much time thinking about that.
I'd love to know if there's, like, other teams that have gone without a captain for, like, four or 5 years or seasons.
To your point there, I don't think, like, I still think that it's eventually Maddie. Like, that's what I think it is. But I don't think he's ready for that yet. And I don't know.
Why not Shane?
It could be Shane.
Right.
Shane hasn't made the team yet. So
no, I know that.
Right. But maybe the idea is they're going to wait until one of these young, that's my point, right? Yeah. One of these young players comes in and says, I'm the leader of this team.
So just devil's advocate flip side. I think if he were to be made the captain, I mean, just as like an image of a franchise, a player, I don't think you can get better than Jordan.
Agreed. Yeah. And if they decide to do it, I'd be like, oh, good. Cool. Good for him. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. You know, like, I'm just thinking, like, I don't know if it makes logistical sense for them to do that.
And I agree with you. I'm just saying that if that decision were made, I think it would be a great thing for the organization. I mean, he's just a real professional, obviously revered around the league even before he became an NHL player for what he did in, you know, the World Juniors, but just universally liked. Real professional, real solid guy. And then the fact that he has a full no trade clause, if at the end of this deal, the Kraken are still not competing, I would understand if there's some reservation, oh, we've had two captains and we're going to trade both of them, right? Because let's say the end of this deal, he wants to go chase a Stanley Cup with the last hurrah. The no trade clause at least makes
you're
it clear.
You're saying he won't be doing that with Seattle?
No,
how dare you?
How dare you? I'm saying hypothetically. The no trade clause.
You choose your next words carefully, sir.
The no trade clause at least makes it clear that it would be his choice to go.
Okay.
Like, he would be clearing that they're not just trading him without his consent. Anyway, okay. But I'm with you guys generally. But that being said, if they were to do it, I'd be a fan.
I appreciate your general with usness.
Okay.
Now, how odd would it have been if he did actually get traded and then two games into his tenure with the next team was his 1,000th game? Well, that would have been so bizarre.
That would have been bizarre, but it does make me think a little bit about Mark Giordano, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was with the Flames forever and then has its 1,000th game ceremony with the Kraken.
But not immediately.
Yeah. Not immediately.
Because there's also this tradition where, like, the team is supposed to buy him a really nice gift. So now if you pop in and all of a sudden, the day after you get there, you're hitting this big career milestone.
That
A, your old
weird.
Teammates might be off the hook, which is kind of nice. They're saving a few bucks. But then your new teammates are like, this guy just got here. Half of them are like, I've never met this guy before. And now I have to buy him a watch or whatever?
It's happened
get
before.
Get off my lawn, they said. Probably.
I think it's happened before. I'm trying to think somebody. Sometimes the former team, like, pitches in or something.
That would make a lot of sense, actually. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, sure would have been nice, though, and this is probably a good segue into the brutal, brutal loss that the Seattle Kraken took on his 1,000th game against the Vegas Golden Knights. First, they lost 3-0 to the Winnipeg Jets. I was not at that game because I was dabbling in color commentary that night for the WHL's Thunderbirds against the Spokane Chiefs.
Have you heard about this, John? I haven't heard about
Never
this.
Heard
did,
about
let,
it.
Let us know what was going on there.
I did color commentary, and it was, what
do we'll
you want
to know?
We'll
get to that. Let's talk some Kraken stuff.
Okay. Yeah. You want to talk more about that?
We'd like to hear your take on the Jets game.
The Jets game. Well, I didn't watch the Jets game. That's probably like one of two, maybe three Kraken games of all time I haven't fully watched from end to end.
Does that honestly make you feel like a little weird that you haven't seen it?
I not really. I did watch the highlights, so I at least saw that the Kraken got shut out and it was 2-0 and then there's an empty netter. And I understand that it was one of the less entertaining games to watch. It was 0-0 for quite a while, if I'm not mistaken. And then they ended up losing 3-0. Was that a good recap?
Yeah, how did I do? Pretty low event, tight checking type of game for the first half of it. And then it really seemed like the Kraken just kind of ran out of gas about halfway through the game. And Winnipeg just kind of, you know, controlled play from then on out. I mean, the Kraken had a few chances here or there, but, you know, I was a substitute for Darren at the Kraken game.
How
this
was
one.
That?
Didn't get to meet the Twitter intern. The Twitter intern was tweeting from somewhere. but I did get many comments that the Sound of Hockey representative was more attractive at this game. So that was good.
Oh.
Yeah, that was good.
Shots fired.
I mean, I can't debate it. It's fine.
Indeed. But
I do have a face for radio. That's why I usually stick to podcasting. But on that night, ironically, I was on TV.
He was on TV. Yeah. That's right.
What do you think about that?
It was very cool. I watched that game too. Listened to a little Darren Brown commentary. Anyway.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But no, you recapped it well. It's not much to talk about that game. I think
it was a closer. I mean, yes, that Winnipeg kind of controlled the play halfway through, but kind of a freaky opportunity to get that first goal. And then after that, the Kraken were kind of stretching it to get back in it. And led to a rush goal by Winnipeg and an empty net. So
it was one of those games where the first goal was going to be huge.
Yeah,
and they just Winnipeg got it. So,
but
do we want to talk about the Vegas game? Or? Okay, so then the next game, the Seattle Kraken enter the third period down 2-1. They score three consecutive goals by Andre. Was it Andre Burkowski? I think Burkowski might have had the first goal. Who scored the other ones? Maddie scored. I know Bjorkstrand scored the fourth goal to make it 4-2. Oh, and Tanev had the tip goal that originally was awarded to Belmar. And then,
which was a pretty sick play in general.
It was nice. Good to see the fourth line chip in.
Yeah.
But so Bjorkstrand scores to make it 4-2 off a breakaway. And there was, what, like 8 minutes left? And you were like, okay, in the bag. No problem. That was the dagger right there. And then that response goal that hasn't been as big of a thing, I don't think, this season as it has in seasons past, rears its ugly head, and William Karlsson brings them back within one goal. And then their coach after the game, Bruce Cassidy, was like, well, that gave us a lot of life, right? Like, and the Kraken pointed to that too. You know, Hackstall pointed to that. He's like, now all of a sudden it's a one goal game. This is Cassidy speaking. One goal game with 6-7 minutes left. That's nothing, right? And that's exactly what it was. And so where I think even with that, I still, all the way down to the moment that Vegas scored the tying goal, I was like, they have this in the bag. You know, they're bunkered down in their defensive zone. There's not a lot of dangerous chances getting through. And I mean, Chandler Stephenson made an elite play, and that's what happened. And a second before that, Jamie Oleksiak has a chance to clear, and he's not hard enough on the puck. He doesn't get it past Jack Eichel at the blue line. Eichel sends it towards the net. Stephenson, I don't know if he was doing it on purpose, like if he was trying to tip it towards the net and mishit it, but whatever happened, if he was doing that on purpose, it truly was an unbelievable play, because he like basically swatted it straight backwards, knew exactly where Marchessault was. Marchessault just leaned into it and scored into an open net. So
And
that was the tying goal.
I felt the same way. I thought the
with Kraken, 16 seconds left.
You know, that the response goal was devastating, but the Kraken kind of bounced back themselves and played the kind of defensive hockey you need to close out a game. And then there's just a great play made on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was plenty of opportunities, though, to clear it earlier. Yeah. And even on that, the first goal, the response goal to make it 4-3.
Yes.
There was plenty of opportunity. So it doesn't come down to that one play, but
there actually was a chance on that goal. Yanni Gord had it right on his stick.
Yeah.
And he had a chance to like chip it off the boards. It almost looked like one of those where, like, you know, when the puck is spinning weird and it like hits your tape and like doesn't stick on your stick the way you expect it to. It looked like that was what happened. Like maybe the puck was rolling or spinning or something, but it touched Yanni's stick and he just didn't control it. It just like bounced right off of his stick. That was the big chance to clear the puck on the response goal. Didn't happen.
I was devastated when that happened. Because the difference here is they closed that out. Vegas has a 6-point lead on the Kraken, and I think the Kraken still had one game in hand at the time, or still does. And
another head-to-head matchup between the two.
That's right, next week. And now it's a 9-point lead.
9-point.
And it's just like, well,
18 games left.
Even just going to overtime when you know Vegas is going to get a point. Right, even that was devastating.
Yeah, it reminded me of the St. Louis game where they...
And then, you know, overtime was back and forth trading chances and, you know, Vegas buried one before the Kraken did. Yeah. Eichel scored and with when Bjorkstrand's stick was held up a little bit.
We should talk about that too. So what happened was they had Petrangelo had a chance off a rush, hit the post. Kraken came back 3-on-1, really, because they had, I think it was Burakovsky, Larson, and Bjorkstrand, and they all went together. Bjorkstrand kind of like eased off at the last second and was like, one of us needs to say hi here in case we don't score. And Petrangelo somehow, it was him, I think, got all the way back and made an unbelievable play to poke the puck away and break up the 2-on-1 or the 3-on-1. And then he just flips it up and over. And Bjorkstrand's racing with Carlson and Eichel looked like he was going to get to it. And Carlson just grabbed his stick, just full on grabbed his stick. So that's why everyone is freaking out on the bench. And he slammed Bjorkstrand, who's the most mild mannered, even keel guy you'll ever meet, slammed his stick against the boards, broke it, did a like fake clap in front of the bench, and then threw his stick across the ice, which you just never see him do something like that.
No, you, so. Yeah. I mean, it goes to show what an important game it is.
Yeah.
I mean, he was obviously upset with the call, but the stakes were really high there. And, you know, I personally thought it was a little amusing. He tried to break his stick. It didn't work. So he had to like, slam it again. It took him two swings to break it. So, you know, a little levity in hindsight, I guess.
The maestro snapping his little directing baton. I'm pretty sure that's what you call that, right? His directing baton.
The directing baton. I think that is accurate.
You know what was interesting? I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when the goals were scored by the Kraken, they were jacked up. Like, mm-hmm. The Kraken was jacked up. They knew how big this game was. And, I mean, when Berkey scored, Bjorkstrand scored, they were really psyched.
Belmar's celebration.
Sorry about that. Oh. Yeah.
No, you're good.
Oh. Belmar's celebration was great, too.
Yeah.
I mean, didn't end up being his goal, but, you know. No, it Maddie's was.
Maddie's celebration. They all, yeah.
Yeah. You could feel it. Yeah, you could feel it in the building. And,
It's going to be devastating. It's going to be hard.
Well, having talked to several Kraken players in the room today, they still believe that they can at least, like, they're going to keep fighting. I don't think they're waving the white flag.
You have to.
Yeah.
Right?
And I think they still believe they can do it. And they do still have a chance. The odds have gone down 10% according to Hoomst.
Money Puck.
Money Puck. Okay. Yeah. So,
But that means 1 out of 10, right? Yeah. Somebody's got to be the one.
Yeah. It probably won't be them, but it could be.
No, but there's been other teams in the 1 in 10.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, having a 10% chance. But that means that 1 out of 10 times, somebody makes through.
It sure would be fun if they can at least like make a race of it, right? Coming down to the stretch.
Oh, yeah.
And then imagine if they actually get in and they'll have played 18 basically must-win games.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Okay, now we're in the playoffs.
Good luck. Right? Yeah.
I'm sure you're well rested. And
Yeah.
My reaction coming out of that is they're cooked.
I think so.
Like that.
I do think so. I hope they prove me wrong, but I think they're dead.
I'm
in
glad
the water.
Their mindset is continuing to push. Mm-hmm. They should. That's the only mindset. But Nashville won again. We're recording this on Wednesday. Nashville won again today. They're 12 points behind Nashville.
St. Louis
they
got
to cut it out. That's unacceptable from Nashville. They got to stop it. They got to stop it.
Got to stop this winning thing.
God.
And nine points behind Vegas. So, it just seems like they're through 64 games. Just I don't know if there's enough runway left.
It stung. That one definitely stung. John, you should consider, after a really tough loss, schedule yourself for an early workout the next day.
All right. I'll consider it. Kay. Yeah.
Trades around the league. There were some.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a few, actually. And we were going to do an interestinger carry on, but we're going to actually whittle it down. So TSN has a trade tracker, and you can filter it by major trades. So we're only going to go through the trades that they indicate are major trades. Okay. So we'll still play interesting or carry on, but I think there's only like 9 or 10 of these. So we'll get through them decently quickly, but they all might be interesting. We'll see. You know what trade is not on here?
The Alex Munberg trade?
Yes.
Okay. Not major, I guess.
Not a major trade.
Not interesting.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting that it's not interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. The first quote unquote major trade, Vladimir Tarasenko moved from the Ottawa Senators to the Florida Panthers. I don't know why. For a conditional 2024 fourth round pick and a 2025 third round pick. Interesting or carry on?
So I think it was only interesting because people thought it Tarasenko might go for more, but Tarasenko had a lot of control over the situation with the no trade and pretty much wanted to go to Florida, I guess. So,
okay.
Not seems interesting.
Like, seems like a good fit in Florida.
John thinks it's not interesting.
Not interesting. Yeah. Let's carry on.
Sorry, Curtis. You've been overruled.
Is that how that works?
Next major trade, Adam Henrik and Sam Carrick and a seventh round pick to the Edmonton Oilers for a 2024 first round pick and a conditional 2025 fifth round pick to the Anaheim Ducks. Interesting or carry on? Adam Henrik.
Carry on.
Carry on. A Ryan Johansson to, this, I don't know this if this ridiculous. Is more yeah. major than Alex Wennberg.
Yeah,
I don't know.
How is this?
Ryan Johansson to the Philadelphia Flyers for Sean Walker. So, and a conditional first round pick. Sean Walker back to the Avalanche and a fifth round pick. Sean Walker and a fifth for Ryan Johansson and a conditional
first. The first rounder makes it major, I guess. Okay. So.
I think in totality, what Colorado did was bunch of major moves. I don't know if this one in isolation so much. I mean,
no, they had to clear space, so this is what they did. Yeah. Right.
Bowen Byram to the Buffalo Sabres. Bowen Byram Buffalo beats Battlestar Galactica.
Bears.
You know what I find interesting about this one?
Wait, we didn't say what the return.
Gotta read the whole trade.
Casey Millsap. The deal was one for one. So Casey to Colorado, Bowen to Buffalo. One for one deal.
That is interesting. But what I find interesting about it, Bowen Byram's now in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. He's with,
and his name starts with a B.
No.
Oh, sorry.
Dylan Cousins is also on Buffalo.
So Cousins, since his name starts with a, well, he should probably go to Dallas.
And,
sorry. John's getting
and
mad.
Peyton Krebs is also on Buffalo.
Okay.
Those guys were all selected first round, the 2019 first round draft pick, and they're WHL players.
Very cool.
I think that's interesting.
They were. I do remember them all being on our radar.
Yeah, and Krebs was the one with the broken
injury,
Achilles.
That made his stock drop.
But those three guys, all from the WHL first rounders from 2019.
The more you know. Okay, less alliteration. In the next one, Noah Hanifin to the Vegas Golden Knights for Daniil Mirimanov and a conditional first-round pick and a conditional 2025 third-round pick to the Calgary Flames. So Hanifin for Mirimanov, a first and a third with some, I think there's some pretty wonky conditions on that one. But anyway, interesting.
I feel like we'll come back to Vegas on this list.
Yeah.
We'll carry on for now.
Yeah.
But it's pretty interesting because Hanifin was one of the big pieces out there. Jake Guentzel and Ty Smith. Here we go. Now, this is a trade, baby.
Ty Smith.
Jake Guentzel and Spokane Ty Smith. Chief. That's right. To the Carolina Hurricanes for Michael Bunting, Ville Koivunen, Vasily Panomarov, Cruz Lucius, a conditional 2024 first round pick, and a conditional 2024 fifth round pick. Penguins are attaining 25% of Jake Guentzel's salary. I think that one's interesting.
Very interesting.
That's a big, big bet from the Hurricanes, who you got to wonder. I mean, Guentzel, you'd think he's going to hit the open market, but who knows? Who knows where his mind is at?
Yeah, I would think so. It's Carolina pushing chips in to try and do something right now, for sure. And from my perspective, I think it's interesting on Pittsburgh's side, too. I mean, is this kind of the beginning of the end in Pittsburgh?
I'm really interested to see how Guentzel performs. Because I've always thought this is a hot take. I've always thought that, like, playing where he was playing, he's able to, even though he's a star player, he's kind of able to fly under the radar there with Sid and Evgeny Malkin. You know, like, there's such long standing superstars in the NHL that he didn't have to be the top player. I think that's still the case in Carolina. Carolina is such a good team that he doesn't have to be the number one guy by any means. But I'm just curious how he does not in Pittsburgh. So
yeah,
I think that'll be interesting to watch.
It's a big trade. And if he doesn't, you know, perform well or Carolina flames out quickly again, could be criticized afterwards.
Because you remember, like, when he arrived and it was like Guentzelmania because he wasn't a touted prospect. He just showed up and immediately started producing. And it was like, wow, this has to end at some point. Like, this kid's not supposed to be like a superstar. And then he continued to produce all throughout his Pittsburgh career. So that made him into a star player. So good for him. Curious to see what happens with him the rest of the season and into the offseason. Tyler Toffoli to the Winnipeg Jets for a third round and a second round pick to the New Jersey Devils.
I like Tyler Toffoli, but and he's a great playoff performer. They didn't give up much. I think it's a nice trade. Okay. Nice bit of business, I'd say.
Yeah. And then the last one. So I'm just going to already deem this one interesting myself.
Okay.
And Tomáš Hertl. No one saw this one coming, and it came at the 11th hour just before the deadline. Tomáš Hertl and 2 third-round picks to the Vegas Golden Knights and to the San Jose Sharks, a 2025 first-round pick, and David Edstrom. Sharks are retaining 17% of Hertl's salary every year for the rest of his contract, which I believe is six years.
Six more seasons, yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting deal.
What I'm going to let you guys give your takes first, and then I'll give mine.
So from Vegas's perspective, I like the fit. We may get to whether it's a fit. I don't think it's a fit for every team, but if you can get Tomáš Hertl for, I think it comes out to what, 6.75 or something like that for Vegas each year moving forward. Yeah, he'll be old at the end, but that might be after Vegas's window anyway. As a 2C for the next 4 or 5 years, he makes Vegas even more formidable. So I like the deal for them. They didn't have to give up a lot to make it happen. They just needed the kind of creative thinking to kind of get it across the finish line. So him and Hanifin, they're even more dangerous this
year.
Well,
I mean, the question about Hertl is health. He's been out for a couple months. What?
Nothing. I'm holding on my take, so.
So, you know, he's a good hockey player if he can stay healthy, but I'm wondering if he's getting into this chronic injuries that faces people as they get older. So, unbelievable that they pulled this off, but at the same time, there is a lot of risk that comes with the 6 years of Hertl, so.
I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop with Vegas. Right?
I know, but how long have we been saying that?
I know.
3 years?
I know. Yeah. It's got to happen at some point, but if they win another Stanley Cup, it's all worth it. You know?
Yeah, so that's why I stopped short of saying like, oh, this
then
is
they won
screw
the cup.
Yeah,
so
I know.
The other shoe will never drop, but I mean, because they've done it. You know, they did what they set out to do by pulling these strings. The thing that made me chuckle about you mentioned his health, is as we were hanging out at Kraken Community Iceplex waiting for Ron Francis to speak, Allison came on and she had, or came into the room that we were all hanging out in, and she had NHL Network on her computer. NHL Network is talking about Tomáš Hertl, and they're like, he's injured now. He's on LTIR. So that's the thing to keep in mind. But I've heard he's going to be good to go for the playoffs. Well, of course he is.
Yeah,
right?
I think I did see
of
that.
Of course
he
is. Yeah. And I know, like, the report is that Mark Stone is way more hurt and he's not going to be ready and this and that. I don't know. It's just like.
Totally agree. We talked about that.
I totally understand, you know, and John, you say, well, maybe your team should play within these rules. They're playing within the rules, whatever. But there's something there.
So
there's something there if every time they put a guy on LTIR, he comes back just in time for game one.
I will say they're playing within the rules, but they should change the rules.
I agree.
This is BS.
When they say, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game. Well, I freaking hate the game here. I think it's bogus. It's absolutely bogus.
So here's my...
The game
quick
should be changed.
The quick rule change I propose is you require a cap compliant team in the playoffs. So like in the lineup. So that would mean that Hertl and Stone and everybody else,
they
couldn't
can
all
back.
Play together.
They could not.
No, because you'd be over the cap. Right. I would have to do the math, but I think they're...
Well, they have like 120 million or something like that on their total.
That would be a pretty
payroll.
That would be a pretty big change, though, just based on
how,
you know,
it's not that big of a deal.
So the way cap accruals work.
Don't think of accruals. You just have to have a cap compliant team in one game, one day.
No. I understand, but just the way it works, like with deadline acquisitions, it's frequently the case that you're like daily cap hit for a team, for a non-Vegas team. Let's say like, I don't know.
Any other team in the league.
Any other team besides Vegas.
And maybe Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay did this a little bit too.
Would have like a $88 million prorated to the full season daily cap hit after the trade deadline. But that's because they've been accruing cap space from before the deadline. Do you know what I mean? And so they get to the end of the season. They're not using LTIR at all. But they have because the trade deadline falls so late in the season, you're able to have a roster that is kind of, you wouldn't be able to have if it was your team the entire year. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
So I like the idea, but maybe the threshold needs to be a little higher or something like that. Maybe it needs to be like cap plus $5 million.
Maybe it can't exceed the last month of your, since the trade deadline.
Yeah. Something like that would make sense. I personally don't have a strong feeling about Vegas and long-term injury manipulation. I just think that they have kind of shown the league how, when you're in your window, how to be hyper aggressive. Mm-hmm. I sometimes don't think NHL front offices are inventive enough or aggressive enough when they're in their window to be like, first round picks, like who cares? Like, you're in your window, do everything you can within the rules. And that's what Vegas is doing. And I can't help but just think they're doing it better than the other teams.
So
right now.
I'll be, one counterpoint is,
yep,
they did it once.
Yep.
They've won the Stanley Cup once.
Fair enough.
Which is a big deal. But there's plenty of other teams in the last 10 years that haven't. Tampa Bay being kind of the exception, where they've also kind of manipulated long-term injured reserve.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but my point is that, so take the last 10 Stanley Cup champions, 2 out of 10, it worked.
Mm-hmm. I think those are the only two teams that I remember having this exact thing play out, though, too.
Well, there's also
it's like,
a couple scenarios.
Well, our superstar is hurt long term and he should be good to go. Let's see. Checks the watch, you know.
But Vegas is very different than even Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're acquiring and spinning off fan favorites, right? I remember when they sent Nate Schmidt.
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, Fleury, Nate Schmidt. These guys were loved by the community, and they're like, we don't care.
Yeah.
And probably the fans don't care either now.
They're highly unlikable. So they're different in that sense, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Tampa Bay is not super likable.
Tampa Bay is probably like, he's hurt, probably could come back early, but it wouldn't work with the cap, so we're gonna deal with it.
Team doctors say he can't come back. Yeah. So. And they work for the team, so they, you know.
But I don't think Tampa Bay, well, I shouldn't say
I just said that. I do think that there's some sort of like neutral doctor that's supposed to,
I doubt it.
I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't think the union would agree with that. They probably have to like file papers or something like that, but I don't think somebody's like, okay.
They have a rubber stamp that says your LTIR
stretching him out or checking his knees or whatever.
The guy's like, ow. He's like, okay, he can't go.
Oh, he's not good to go. It only hurts when I breathe.
I think there is room in the CBA for like the league to be checking and confirming that there's no LTIR shenanigans going on, but I don't think the league is really assumed that role or been that aggressive in doing that.
Placing a phone call.
But it does seem like this year, more than in years past, you get rumblings through various insiders that other teams are increasingly unhappy about this. So maybe this does start to change, whether it's a new rule or it's like league enforcement of LTIR. I think there will be, you will hear noise about that in the offseason.
I do wonder about if it's from a union perspective and a player perspective. Is this advantageous to the players by putting more salary in play?
Yeah.
Right? So technically they're going over the salary cap, and so then all teams on average are higher, therefore more people are getting paid more money.
Maybe.
So that's where I think you'll get the pushback from the union in a CBA situation.
Mm.
So
yeah, I think that's right.
Let's move on to our segments. Our first segment is John's favorite segment, Bad Boys.
Ooh.
And there's a retort within a Bad Boys, which is kind of fun. Torts, you don't see that every day. It's a you don't see that every day featuring Torts in a Bad Boys. So that's a segment within a segment within a segment. It's literally the movie Inception. I think this is the plot to Inception. And it ends with Torts just spinning a top on the bench there. John has no idea what we're talking about.
I've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. You've probably seen that one. Okay.
I'd like to see that movie.
You've not seen it?
No, I'd like to see the Torts version.
That sounds very
interesting.
So anyway, Torts, speaking of unlikable Tampa Bay Lightning, his team, the Philadelphia Flyers, was playing against them. They were down, I think, 3-0, and there is this play where two Flyers skates came together and tripped up Isamont from the Lightning. They initially announced that the penalty was going to Isamont. John Cooper freaked out on the Tampa Bay bench, and then they're like, we made a mistake. We're making a change to the call. It should not be going to Tampa Bay. It should be going to Philadelphia, right? Then, a little while after that, somebody on Philadelphia gets a 10-minute misconduct for something, and Torch just loses his mind, and he's screaming a lot of obscenities at the refs, and he gets an unsportsmanlike and a game misconduct, meaning he has to leave. You don't see coaches getting thrown out of NHL games very often. It's not like Major League Baseball, right? Where it's like once every fourth game, the manager gets thrown out.
Throwing a temper tantrum on the field. Yeah.
Now, I got to give a shout out to John Boy Media. If you haven't watched the John Boy breakdown of this thing, it is one of the funnier internet videos I've seen in a long time. And they're reading the lips, which aren't that hard to read in this scenario, but with John Boy's like kind of New York accent and saying what Tortorella is saying, it is so funny. So funny. So go check that out if you haven't already.
What do you guys think of Tortorella's actions here?
I didn't quite gather like what was the big deal leading up to this, you know, like why he totally lost his mind. I also think it's a little bit petulant for him to stay on the bench and say, I'm not leaving, which is what he did. But did I use that word right? Petulant?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Like a petulant child.
Indeed.
And can you say that as what part of speech is that? How did I use it? It is petulant. Is that a adjective?
Yes.
Maybe?
Or an adverb. Acting petulantly.
Okay. Yeah. So it's petulant to say, but I think he's probably got a point based on how John Boy read his lips, which was that he said, I'm not leaving until the official comes over and talks to me. And I think that's reasonable.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I don't think
maybe after the verbal abuse. Cause at that point he'd said a lot of things.
It got to that point. Like
he's like, I'm not talking to you.
I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of going over there.
Okay. You know what? You just changed my mind.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Yeah. I mean,
no, you're right. I agree with you. I think if you get verbally assaulted by the coach, you don't have to go talk to him.
Yeah, it's not like he's going to have a peaceful conversation.
I agree with you.
Okay, cool.
My number one takeaway is it's just like we're getting back to real Torts stuff, and it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. That was my number one takeaway. But my second was there was kind of this, I don't know whether it's Philadelphia driven or something, but this kind of counter narrative started almost immediately that Tortorella was somehow wronged in all of this, and like he should have.
Oh, wasn't the CFO for the Flyers say like, oh, we're going to pay whatever he gets fined?
Yeah, and
which turned out to be $50,000 in 2 games.
$50,000 in 2 game suspension. You know, it did seem like a stiff penalty to me too. But if you're thrown out of the game, you got to leave,
dude. You can't be doing that.
You got to leave.
Yeah, like come on. That's
so. I thought it was funny. He should have left.
Our other bad boys, Matthew Rempe has received his first suspension, right? So now he's been like every second game pretty much.
So I think why don't you finish what the
and
bad boy
is? And
it was
a legit one. He elbowed Jonas Siegenthaler in the face, concussed Siegenthaler, and then what did he get? Four games, I think. Yep.
Did he concuss? Is that official that he concussed him?
Somebody tweeted it, so it's probably legit. Yeah. Can't tell you what my source was, but I saw somebody tweet that.
So this history goes back to another hit of his that we discussed on this podcast, which was Matt Rempe hit Nathan Bastian on the Devils a few games ago. There was no suspension coming out of that, but there were fights and whatnot. Then flash forward to this game and Kraken legend Curtis McDermott is out there trying to fight Matt Rempe to defend
Kraken legend Nathan Bastian's honor.
All comes full circle back to the Kraken.
Wait, he was coming after him after the hit on
Bastian.
I think he was challenging him before that too.
I think there were challenges happening earlier
in the game. And then he elbowed Siegenthaler and got kicked out of the game, so there was no bell to be answered there. So I mean, didn't have time. He got kicked out of the game.
So anyway, but the emotions were amped up because McDermott was clearly just like going after Rempe, and then Rempe has this terrible hit later and, you know, gets ejected, obviously. At the time, I thought the Bastian hit should have been at least a fine or maybe like a game suspension. I didn't like that hit at all.
Wasn't Bastian kind of hunched over though?
He was hunched over, but not like at the last second. And Rempe's big, and you got to take responsibility when you're bigger than other players to not hit them in the head. And he didn't, and the league clearly didn't think there was anything there and didn't suspend him. I just think that if there had been some discipline related to that, then maybe you don't get this. And anyway, Matt Rempe has been kind of on a kind of bender here.
It's
of,
been an interesting
weird,
start to his career.
Weird
Very
stuff.
Interesting start to his career.
So I don't know. 4 games is stiff, but I almost wonder whether it's kind of like a...
Well, we didn't give it to you for the first one.
Yeah. There's more to it than just this one hit. This one hit was bad.
It was bad. It was a full-on, lifted up his elbow, caught Siegenthaler in the face, the exact kind of hit. Like, when they introduced the Department of Player Safety, I swear it was, like, with this exact thing in mind, right? Yeah. Like
yeah. Mark Savard loses his career.
Yes.
On a hit like this.
Of course, and you go straight to a Bruin on that one.
And I was thinking about Zdeno Chara taking responsibility for not hitting people.
See, I was thinking of the other side of it, the Rafi Torreses and the Matt Cooks that kept doing these kinds of things. They're like, we got to change these behaviors from some of these players. Well, now Rempe is on that. He's on that radar. So.
Do you know, do you know McDermott was a trade line debt? Acquisition as well?
A trade line dead? I did see that.
Yeah, he was.
I did
see
that.
You wonder why he was picked up.
Well, clearly for this exact reason.
Yeah.
100%.
And they do play each other one more time, just FYI.
A number of teams did this. I mean, like Maple Leafs, the Bruins, the Devils, all picked up like tough defenders. Like that was a kind of theme of this deadline. They weren't significant deals according to TSN though, so we didn't talk about them.
So the Matt Rempe talk reminds me that we didn't actually talk about my color commentary thing. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about
it. Okay, well, it was fun. It was incredibly fun.
How do you think you did? Like,
I mean, it's hard for me to judge myself on that.
Did you go back, watch it back?
I did. And I thought it sounded pretty good, but like I listen to the podcast and think that sounds good sometimes too, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, but sometimes you know when you have a good performance, and right?
I do sometimes leave here, and I'm like, that's a rough one, and then Sam puts some
magic on it,
and I'm like, okay, thanks, Sam, for making me sound
some
a lot
John
better
Boy
than
dubbing
I.
Over what you said.
So here's what Darren meant to say, and then it's all of a sudden it's this really eloquent thing.
Like, AI, no.
But yeah, I think, I mean, the feedback was all really positive. I'm gonna get to do it again. I think 10 days from now on the 24th. So, but my takeaway is that. It is kind of stressful. There's a lot going on, but B, it was so much fun. And I am so jealous of people that do that full time for a living because it was awesome. It was so fun. Like I'm not exaggerating. I just had
that is awesome.
Absolute blast.
That's incredible. So I hope you get to do it more.
Yeah. So I watched it. Ian Furness was on the call. He did a great job. He always does.
And, I mean, first of all, I should throw out that like, he is such a consummate pro and he walked me through everything and like, I owe him the whole opportunity. He's the one that asked me to do it and he's continued to give me these awesome
opportunities.
So I'm very thankful for that. So thank you for mentioning that. And he's, you know, he just kind of like told me everything to watch out for and be ready. And it was a very different experience than being a writer covering the NHL where everything is so tight-lipped and buttoned up. Like WHL, we just cruised right into Matt Odette's office before the game and his whole coaching staff came in and like gave us the breakdown on what's been happening with the Thunderbirds and, you know, same thing with the Spokane Chiefs. So it's like,
yeah, so
very different, very, very different.
Do you have to like learn the rosters or is there, there are cue cards that you can kind of, there's probably both, right?
I mean, they hand you that stuff, definitely. But I will say that's one thing that I learned, and Allison talked about this too when I interviewed her about her one time that she did color for the Kraken. She talked about how hard it was to like know who the players were. And I felt that like I spent more time trying to figure out interesting things about the players and trends that have been happening with the teams and things like that. And then in the game, I felt a little like a fish out of water when I couldn't tell what player I was talking about, you know? And so that's one thing that I want to try to do better for next time. Just have a better grasp on the rosters.
Who are the teams next time?
Portland and Seattle.
Oh, okay.
So
fun.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it. I thought you did great, Darren.
Thanks, Curtis.
Really proud of you.
Thank you.
That feels weird to say, but I was watching it. I thought you did great. and you and Ian worked really well off each other. And it was, I don't know. I had a great time. I'll
you know
be watching
what's incredible is Ian, I think previously had done, he does color sometimes and play-by-play, right? He mixes it up. Is that right?
I'm not sure on that anymore. But
doesn't Benton do play-by-play?
Maybe sometimes. I don't know.
Then who does color with him?
I don't know.
I thought it would be in, but okay.
I mean, they don't do TV broadcasts very often.
I know, but there's six or so a year. Yeah. So
anyway, had a blast.
Good stuff.
Really cool experience. And I'm incredibly jealous of people that get to do that full time. We now move on to you don't see that every day. Got to mention that. So the Wild pulled their goalie in overtime to give themselves a 4-on-3 advantage, beat Nashville. The tricky thing here is that had they gotten scored on with the net empty, they would have lost their loser point. That's the rule. So pretty gutsy move by John Hines.
And I don't know where I heard it, but I heard that rule is in their prior to the 3-on-3 overtime.
So I think it's been there for a long time.
It's like a legacy rule
that
when games could end in a tie, which made me think like maybe that's unintended that they kept it in there.
I mean, it makes sense. Why wouldn't you do it every game if, you know?
Well, because you could win in shootout, but if you don't trust yourself in a shootout.
But don't you think you have a better... I'd be curious about like the percentages, and I don't know how you'd ever figure this out, but 4-on-3 is a huge advantage, right?
There's plenty of data on 4-on-3.
Just to hand yourself a 4-on-3 advantage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With an empty net. I bet you're giving yourself a better chance to win. Here's my theory, my hypothesis. You're giving yourself a better chance to win with a 4-on-3 and an empty net than you would going into a shootout.
Well, and supposedly Nashville was 2-0 in shootouts and like 5-for-6 on shootout
attempts,
shots. Hmm.
And John Hines, as the former coach of that team, knows very well how good they are. I'm stretching it, but
yeah.
Anyway, it was
good
interesting.
Stuff. I like it.
Interesting move. Gordon Bombay of him.
The one tweak I would do on the rule is you should be able to steal that other point.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So Nashville does not get a point in that.
Okay. Remember when I said we were going to keep this episode before we started recording? We're going to try to keep this one to 45 minutes.
When you talk 15 minutes about Minnesota high school hockey.
You kept asking me questions.
I know. I was interested.
I was passionate about it.
I was interested.
God. We now move on to our tweets of the week. Curtis, your tweet of the week.
Mine comes from the Vancouver Canucks. General manager Patrick Alvin announced today that defenseman Elias Pettersson has been assigned to the Abbotsford AHL from Orebro.
Right after they signed
the SHL.
Him. Oh, wait. Yeah.
So this is the other Elias Pettersson. Now one step away from the NHL.
Yep.
Is what you're telling me. And he's in the same organization as the Vancouver Canucks. I had an issue not two or three shows ago about Ilya Sorokin and Igor Shesterkin playing across the river from each other separate teams.
Yeah, we know.
We cannot accept this.
You made this point then.
We're going on strike.
If rule change.
Defenseman Elias Pettersson gets called up to the Vancouver Canucks. I'm done. I'm out.
One just has to go by a middle name.
That's a good idea.
But then you still have Pettersson. But that'd be better. Middle name. We'll have to do that. We'll work on
change the pronunciation or something. You got to do something. John, your tweet of the week.
I don't have one because I want to keep this short and tight.
Oh,
that's very,
great.
Very considerate of you.
Yeah, great. Mine is, I'm going to be a little honest here. It's a little bit self-serving, if you will. But Megan O32, who's a follower and a Twitter friend, she said, I think at Benny Drawbars, so the organist, Benny Drawbars, I think at Benny Drawbars just played I'm Just Ken, and it was amazing. And he did, and it was amazing. I'm Just Ken from the Barbie movie. So then Sound of Hockey, the intern, retweeted it and said, I'm Just Ben, parentheses, knee Drawbars. And then So Sassy Pants responded and said that it was her tweet of the week and said, hey, can the intern use his own tweet for tweet of the week on the pod? And then the intern responded and said, I don't see why not. So therefore, it's allowed that we can use our own organization's tweets as tweets of the week.
So relatedly, I will call out one thing about your appearance on for the Thunderbirds, though.
Okay.
In the opening, it said Ian Furness gave his Twitter handle, and then it said Darren Brown.
Yeah.
And under there, it had a certain Twitter handle that I
at
think
sound
belongs,
underscore hockey.
Yeah, I think that belongs to the intern.
So did you get that approved?
You're right. Yeah. I did. I ran it up the proper channels. I ran it up the flagpole. Now, I actually, when I went into the truck before, they had it at Darren Fun Brown. And I was like, I don't really need to promote that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I don't actually care that much about growing the following on
and
Darren Fun Brown.
The intern said it was okay to use sound.
Correct. Yeah. I checked in. And I'd really prefer.
We're checking with the intern on these things.
I'd really prefer to grow the at sound underscore hockey following.
Fair enough.
Speaking of which, hey, make sure to follow us there as well. I don't think I said that at the top of the show. Also, follow us on TikTok. Follow us on Instagram. Join the Patreon. Those are our tweets of the week.
Okay. And that wraps up episode
2. It sure does. I don't know why you're always so like confused when we get to this point. It's pretty obvious.
Well, you started saying, oh, follow us there.
Because I didn't want to forget it. I just wanted to make sure that it got thrown in.
Thanks a lot to our Patreons. Mm-hmm. And we will have a mailbag dropping shortly. And keep up.
No matter what I do.
What are you singing?
I'm always... You'll find out. I'm always number two.
no one. Are you done?
Stick taps for Andy.
Stick taps for Andy. Apple Podcast for your reviews, 5-star.
No reviewer this week.
No reviewer this week. What's up with that? Yeah.
Driving me insane. All my life been so polite, but I'll sleep alone tonight. 'Cause I'm just Ken. Anywhere else I'd be a 10. Is it my destiny to live and die a life of blonde fragility? I think I screwed that part up. I'm just Ken. Where I see love, she sees a friend. What will it take for her to see the man behind the tan and fight for me?